Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, pleased to welcome you to All Sides Weekend as we spend the next hour talking about the arts in Ohio. And we have a panel very well qualified for this discussion, probably the best we could put together, beginning with Julie Hennehan, who is the executive director of the Ohio Arts Council. Milt Boffman is the president of GCAC, the Greater Columbus Arts Council. And my old buddy, Steven Anderson, who is the artistic director of Catco Phoenix. And let's start with you, Steve, very briefly. The hits just keep on coming. What's going on at Catco Phoenix? Explain again the collaborator, Catco Phoenix now.
Right. Well, Catco and the Phoenix Theater for Children merged last July, and this is our premiere season. And we opened with The Last Smoker in America, which is going to open off Broadway in July. And then we moved on to It's a Wonderful Life, the radio play, and then I Am My Own Wife at the beginning of the year, which was people were very pleased with. And it was an astonishing performance by actually an Ohio State University alumni, Christopher Marlowe Roche. And then next week we begin with What the Butler Saw. Jeff Nelson, the founder and emeritus artistic director, will be directing the Joe Orton hit. And it's actually is the first professional show that I ever saw. In 1972 in England, when Joe Orton was just, I think, recently had died, but it was a new play when I saw it. And I was six.
You were six.
Yes.
And it was a shocking play for its time. And as you know, as you just were mentioning the repertoire, I'm thinking he's getting edgier. They're getting very – no, that's he's getting edgier and really – you're going to spark a lot of conversation, which is a good thing.
Well, we like people to talk. We think we're trying to continue that conversation. Actually, we're doing a series of staged readings with a variety of smaller companies that PNC has made possible. And there's a Twitter screen behind the staged reading, and people respond in time and place to what they're seeing. So that's been a really – well, it was a scary idea because nobody knew what was going to happen, you know, and whether somebody was going to pick up on the feed and come from outside, which has happened a couple of times, but it was, you know, interest. They were like, what is this? How can I get down there?
Do the authors and the performers take these tweets and think about them and maybe if they have to make changes of works in progress, consider what's...
Right. Well, interestingly, we began with Ed Graysick, my old mentor and former director of Players Theatre Columbus, his new play, The Blue Moon Dancing. And it's a new play, and so he was very interested in what they had to say.
Well, I congratulate you. We're going to hear more about that later, and you're
going
to do
much.
Some predictions for us about the temperature of the arts in Columbus and in Ohio, because with all the talk of the lousy economy, I always like to make this point. The arts still seem to thrive. I mean, we're like bed bugs. We're very hard to kill. You know? I mean, you can take away the funding, and you can do all kinds of things, but people still turn out for performances and museums and galleries, and people are still creating, and people are still moving here to create art. Julie Hennehan, why is that happening?
Well, I think that the arts are always going to be part of people's lives. They're part of people, I think, almost part of our DNA. I think that no matter what happens, people are going to continue to find a way to express themselves, to participate in that expression of the arts, regardless of funding challenges that may come from the state or local or even federal levels. So I just think that people will continue to find a way to participate and to create regardless of those situations. Now, does a favorable funding environment make that easier? Absolutely. And that's what GCAC and the Ohio Arts Council are here to try to continue to do for our constituents in Columbus and around the state.
Can you talk briefly about exactly what the Ohio Arts Council does? What their purpose is?
The purpose of the Ohio Arts Council, when we were established in 1965, so we're celebrating our 46th anniversary this year, was to preserve Ohio's artistic and cultural heritage. We were established by Governor Rhodes. It was part of the advent of a lot of state arts agencies across the country when the National Endowment for the Arts was established.
Part of the Great Society.
It was part of the Great Society movement, yes. So our role actually primarily has become that as a grant maker, a funder, but that was not what we had originally because we didn't have that much money as we started out. But over time, we have evolved into probably the longest and most sustaining funder in terms of how long we've been in existence for arts organizations across the state. Obviously, we've had our challenges over the last couple of biennia regarding funding. But the other role that the Arts Council plays is that as providing services and a policymaker in the arts statewide for our constituents. We do a lot in terms of providing advice to constituents around the state, arts organizations, individual artists. We also keep a number of databases for the use of anybody who wants to use them to find if they need artists for particular purposes. We also we run a statewide arts calendar in partnership with the Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland CVBs called artsinohio.com. We are also make sure that the Arts Council is providing a voice for the arts in the state at the state policy level.
So it's fair to say that lobbying is part of what goes on?
The Ohio Arts Council itself does not do direct lobbying for public funding for the arts. The Ohio Citizens for the Arts is the not private nonprofit that is established for the purpose of lobbying for public funding for the arts.
And Milt Boffman, what's going on with the Greater Columbus Arts Council and the arts in our immediate listening area? Although we have listeners all over the world, I want to add. But still, how about Columbus? How about Central Ohio?
Well, Julie, GCAC is a primary part of our responsibilities are grant making, and we're fortunate to be beneficiaries of a share of the Franklin County Hotel Motel Bed Tax. That funding, and through a contract with the City of Columbus, allows us to make grants to arts organizations and individual artists. We're also, by virtue of our contract with the city, have a role in promoting the arts in the community. And we do that with ColumbusArts.com, which I would suggest people take a look at when they can, because it is, just as Julie does it statewide, it's focused on Central Ohio and has become a real important tool to highlight what's going on in the community from arts and cultural organizations. Other things that we're involved with is, of course, as I said, promoting the arts. We also are the sponsor of the Columbus Arts Festival, which the first weekend in June will be, it's hard to believe, the 50th anniversary of the Columbus Arts Festival. We'll be back in the Discovery District again this year, which we're excited about. And we think it's a wonderful thing to be able to present for the city of Columbus and our neighborhood, our neighboring communities. And that is an activity that's done without any public funding. It's really self-supporting through sponsorships, through payments from artists that are participating, vendors, things like that. So we're real excited about that. First weekend in June.
That's always a big event. You have crowds and crowds and crowds for that. That's very popular.
And we pray for good weather.
We pray for good weather. Even when it's very hot, though, people still turn out for that.
And it helps our beverage sales.
Yes, it does. And I think a lot of people look forward to it. And I know we've been down there live, and I hope that will continue as well.
Hope so, too.
Because I think if you can get in the middle of the community, it's all good. Julie, where does the money for OAC come from?
Our primary appropriation comes from the state legislature through the General Revenue Fund. We also get a significant portion of funding from the National Endowment for the Arts.
There's the National Endowment, in my opinion, has always been kind of they like to, if you want a cause, you can beat up the National Endowment for the Arts. Is there a ripple effect to that affects you, that affects us?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Currently, actually, the National Endowment is experiencing some efforts to reduce their funding, not just this year, but also in their next year. The President's budget for the federal FY12 budget came out in February, and there was a recommendation of, I believe, just over $21 million reduction in the NEA's funding.
What's their budget now?
Their budget now is about $167 million.
Which is about what it was 20 years ago, I think.
Yes. So it has not really recuperated from the significant cuts it took in the early
90s. So, in fact, it's probably less in terms of actual spending power.
In terms of actual dollars,
right.
Yes.
It's less. So you and I guess Milt spend probably a fair amount of time talking to people. Is that people of influence, elected officials? Is that fair to say?
I've been seeing a lot of legislators recently, yes.
It's been, it's really critical that we tell our story. And we represent, for GCAC, arts organizations and individual artists in our Central Ohio community, and obviously Julie has a much broader constituency, but we really need to be sure that people understand the impact that these organizations bring to our community and how funding is so critical to the future success of these organizations and these individual artists.
And one thing, Julie, I think it might be fair to say is that the Ohio Arts Council, you represent the whole state, so you represent some very disadvantaged areas where the arts still thrive. There are people there that work hard, and you also represent the Cleveland Orchestra, which is
right.
a world-class,
right.
wealthy,
we
ostensibly organization.
Support some of the smallest arts organizations in the state that have annual operating budgets of less than $10,000 a year, up to the very largest who have $40 or $50 million budgets. I think that as far as the Arts Council is concerned, everybody is important and everybody plays a role in the ecosystem for arts and culture in the state of Ohio. I have a particular concern when some of these smaller communities that have used the arts and culture as an economic development tool, places like Nelsonville, places like Youngstown, places like Mansfield and Wapakoneta over in West Central Ohio, who have used the arts as part of their efforts to revitalize their downtowns as an economic development tool. And the funding that the Arts Council has given to them, while it is a great deal less than we give to the larger institutions, is probably even more important to them because they have less opportunity and fewer outlets there to raise funds from local foundations or corporate foundations in those communities. So I think that the role that the Arts Council has played across the state is very, very important, but particularly so in some of these smaller, more rural, and also in some of the inner cities where arts organizations have a difficult time as well seeking additional funding.
And success breeds success, and I would
yes.
think that the imprimatur of either of your agencies is very important. If JCAC is funding this or the Ohio Arts Council is funding this, maybe I should pay attention, Mr. Banker, or whatever, you know.
We have heard that,
yeah.
yes. We
yeah,
hear
well,
that consistently,
why not? Sure.
that is an important.
Yeah, and you know, I always ride the arts education horse, and I, Milton or
right.
Julie mentioned their significant yes. impact on arts and education, and that's one of the ways that these rural counties and rural areas are served is through the Artists in Education program. I've spent a
yes.
lot of time
yes.
in very remote areas in that program, and it really, really serves all folks.
Thank you, Stephen.
Hold that thought.
I won't be beaten to death when I get back to you.
We're going to give me an opportunity to join the conversation.
We're going to keep playing that drum between now and 12 o'clock noon. We're going to take a break now for 1 minute. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News with Stephen Anderson, Julie Hanahan, and Milt Boffman back in 60 seconds.
Critics of federal funding for NPR suggest that we should do stuff that could succeed on its own in the marketplace. Well, all right. This week, we are adding Jerry Springer to the show. Really? I'm Peter Sagal. Join us and our newly hired bodyguards as Jerry Springer shows us how it's done on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
And Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me tomorrow morning at 11 on 89.7 NPR News. It's 31 degrees in downtown Columbus, clouds today and a high of 42. Cloudy skies tonight and a low of 22 degrees, partly sunny for Saturday, a high of 39, and a chance of snow Saturday night.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're back. Thank you, Amy Jurevich, our producer. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend as we talk about the arts in the state of Ohio between now and 12 noon with Stephen Anderson, the artistic director of Catco Phoenix. Julie Hanahan is the executive director of the Ohio Arts Council. And Milt Boffman is the president of GCAC, the Greater Columbus Arts Council. And I'm not president of anything. but the number to call, we'd like to hear from you. So please call us and participate in this conversation with your ideas, your questions, your comments. 614-292-8513. That's 614-292-8513. You can also go to our Facebook page, All Sides, or you can email allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk a little bit about education. Let's talk about getting people out into some of the communities that you mentioned, Julie, the rural communities. I guess we take it for granted, maybe we shouldn't, that Cincinnati and Columbus and Toledo and Cleveland have that. I'm saying maybe we take that for granted. Maybe it's not true. How does this work? How does it work sending an artist into the community? What do they do? What kind of artist does this? Why?
Well, usually in the Arts Council's Artist in Residence program, which has been in existence for almost three decades now, the artist that the Ohio Arts Council helps support to go into the schools works in conjunction with the art teacher in that location. And Stephen, chime in if you want to talk about your real-world experience at any time. But it has served as a way to bring a teaching artist into the classroom to work with the art teacher and give a more in-depth experience in a particular arts discipline to that that classroom, to that art class. I think that over the years we've seen some reduction in those requests that we have received, and I think that you can tie that directly back to the amount of time that now has to be spent preparing for the standardized tests. We hear that consistently back about why we're not seeing as many applications as we may have seen back in the mid-90s. They're spending so much time now preparing children for the standardized
test. So we're leaving children behind and no child left behind, basically.
Well,
I'm saying that.
The unfortunate thing is, I mean, almost every study that you hear of anymore where it's talking about the role and the impact of arts education in academic prowess and success shows that children who have arts education perform better in every academic discipline, not just the arts.
Right. Well, Eric Pink in A Whole New Mind says it best, I think, which is that the arts provide context, right, that the rote learning provides text, facts, but the arts provide students with the ability to hook things.
That's
on
the why. Mm-hmm. Why? Yeah, why?
That's exactly why. Right. We're working on a really exciting project right now with the support of the Women's Fund and Time Warner called Full Steam Ahead, which works with middle school girls using theater to teach math and science, adding the arts into STEM subjects. And we've had some incredible success with that because the girls come to do theater and they end up learning math and science. Mm-hmm. And so that's another way in which we can provide new delivery systems for arts for education as a whole.
I think one of our challenges here, Christopher, is that there's some really incredible things going on in arts education in our community. And I'm more familiar with Central Ohio. But I think the general public has a hard time seeing it. It's very diffused. Because organizations and CATCO Phoenix has been a leader in this, and other organizations, and particularly in Columbus, have wonderful programs. But it's hard for people to kind of get a complete picture of what's all going on. But there are some really exciting things happening. I think we have to work harder as arts leaders in the community to let the public see what the benefits of these programs are and how they're impacting children.
Well, I'm going to inject myself a moment here because I saw two things that I've never forgotten that are funded by each of your agencies. One was in Portsmouth, Ohio, where I'd never been. There was a school there which was ostensibly a dance school, but they actually taught kids to be in the circus.
Yes.
And a lot of the kids were in wheelchairs, so there was a physical therapy component to this, and a lot of them were not. And it was – I spent an afternoon there with Sal, one of our producers here, and we've never forgotten that. Mm-hmm. It was a few years ago.
Right.
That was an incredible experience. And the other was Stephen Anderson sent me to a grammar school on the west side because there was a woman there funded by GCAC who was teaching third graders to write a play. They were writing their own play. And she would have them in the room, and she would be up in the front, and they would scream out lines to her and ideas, and she would make them change. Now, well, you just said this, so you can't say that now. And the whole process was great. At the end of the hour, they had the second act. I mean, it was amazing to me how they got these kids hooked into language and expression in the 48 minutes that we spent there. But I'll never forget that circus in Portsmouth. That was an amazing program. Yeah. So let me just, as a parent and a taxpayer who's not one of you, say that the reach of these agencies is enormous, and the good work is how do you document it? How do you tell the world? How do you tell people who can't go to these classrooms and these things? It's part of my job, so I'm lucky. But you know, how would you tell someone? How would you tell a legislator?
How would you tell
the good news?
The good news. Well, I think that when I go see legislators, you know, there's a couple things I have to take into consideration first, and one of them is this a new legislator? Sometimes you are coming in to see somebody who's just been newly elected, and I might take a different approach then with that person, depending upon how much they might know about the Arts Council. I also do a little research before I go visit legislators and find out what they're interested in and where their priorities are. But I tell them a little bit about the history of the Arts Council. We have a series of stories which if you haven't seen them on our website, I encourage you to go look at them, and they're called the Arts Part of the Solution stories. And these stories document very clearly how the arts have played a significant role in communities all over the state. A lot of them have had funding from the Arts Council. Some of them haven't. But they're important stories that demonstrate how the arts have had an impact on arts education in the community, how an economic development, downtown revitalization, preparing children for 21st century work skills. So I try to emphasize through those stories with our legislators the important role for a very modest investment of state dollars and how far-reaching those are into communities. And I will say again, the stamp of approval, the imprimatur, as you mentioned, is always brought up and is an important part of why public funding and there is a role for government in the arts.
What is the – I'll ask Milt and Julie and all of you this. Do you have any idea of a percentage of the people you talk to who get it?
Oh, that's pretty hard. not as high as it should be.
Okay.
That's a fair question.
But I think that's on our shoulders, too.
Right, yes. Okay.
And
yes.
I think as arts organizations, we have to make a more concerted effort to get our message out clearly and consistently. Sometimes we're criticized for sending mixed messages about our objectives.
In what way? I'm just
that we might be talking about funding at one time. We might be talking about different types of funding. We might be talking about different types of programming, different issues. And I think in Columbus we've been very fortunate that we've had the larger arts organizations come together to try to create a common voice. And we need to continue to do that. But it's also up to us to help.
The big word everybody hears in the arts anywhere in the country now is collaboration. And, Stephen, you've discussed that on this program before, how groups really have to work together. And I think that's – you've done it for years with CATCO and a lot of – and you're in Phoenix and a lot of – you've been with the ballet. You've been with
the symphony.
You're talking about the symphony. Mm-hmm. Is that happening? Are people picking up on that model?
Yes, they're really learning to work together. It's not easy.
No.
You know, collaboration in this community 10 years ago meant I have something you could do for me.
or don't do my idea.
But don't take too much credit either. But the other voice I think that's really important, just going back to the advocacy thing, is citizen advocates.
Yes.
We have Arts Day coming up. You'll know the date, Julie.
May 11th. The Athenaeum.
Some of the most important arts advocacy I've seen has been from teenagers and students who have gone to legislators and said, this is what arts education has done for me. This is what arts mean to me. And they really sit up and listen when it's not us who it's our job to advocate.
It is sometimes seen as, I think, a little self-serving coming from people who work in the arts.
Right. Yeah. May 11th. Talk to me. What is that at the Athenaeum?
May 11th is the Governor's Awards for the Arts and Arts Advocacy Day. The morning is going to be spent by a lot of high school students and other arts advocates from arts organizations all over the state coming to Columbus to visit with their legislators in the morning. And then at 12 noon, we will have the Governor's Awards for the Arts at the Athenaeum. The luncheon, and we're looking forward to that. We do have confirmed attendance from the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate, We're awaiting word from the governor, but we're hopeful, and we're looking forward to it. It's a big day. It's a little later this year than it is generally, but that gives us a better chance for good weather.
That's a statewide celebration of the arts in one room or one area for everybody to come to.
Which sells out every year.
Yeah.
It's
an
amazing event. It really
is. I remember one of about 10 years ago that was done, and the keynote speaker was none other than Kitty Carlisle Hart, whom a lot of people remember from To Tell the Truth. And what they didn't realize was that she was the president of the New York State Arts Council for many years. She was a wealthy, connected woman, and they sent me down there to interview her. She was quite elderly at the time, and I thought, oh, you know, what am I going to say? She was the most one-on-one, the most passionate, tough advocate for the arts I think I've ever, and she had to have been 90, and she was, you know, I kept thinking she's going to get up and do jumping jacks in a minute, you know. I think
she was very vibrant.
I think she lived to be almost 100 before she passed away, but she was a very sharp and articulate advocate and an angry advocate for the arts, which I think is great, you know. That passion just sort of came out of her. That's right. Tell me, let's talk about art. Let's talk about performances a little bit before we go to our next break. What's going on that's exciting in the next few months in terms of performances?
Speaking of collaboration, I think the most exciting thing is Shadowbox and the Ballet Met with the Seven Deadly Sins, which happens in May. And it's a completely new production. Shadowbox is working with them. Shadowbox, of course, is moving downtown this summer.
They are.
Great. So they'll be a part of the downtown arts community. And we really welcome Steve Geyer and that troupe to downtown. They've been very successful out at Easton, and it'll be really important to have them downtown.
How is Shadowbox different from Catco Phoenix?
Shadowbox is more original work, sketch work, music, and we would, of course, be more traditional theater arts. But Steve Geyer is an amazing
guy.
Great,
he
completely gets that we need to work together, that we need to promote each other. We've done a lot of cross-promotion and work together. So, you know, you're going to see a new face downtown. I mean, you see the buildings going up. People are going to be living in those buildings, and it's going to get more and more interesting to be downtown. So I think we're seeing the turn of that. It's a very slow turn, you know, because somebody asked me, you know, what would you like to see the downtown look like 15 years from now? And I said, well, what it looked like 15 years ago, which is kind of a funny place to
answer.
Be.
Yeah.
But, you know, but at that time you could see from the lobby of the Rife Center, you could see the symphony playing at the Ohio and Broadway down the street. And I think we're coming back to that.
Milt, what does it take to re-energize the community, specifically in Central Ohio or Columbus, about the arts?
Oh, I think people need to participate. I think if people can extend themselves in what they do in terms of arts and cultural activities in the community, I think they'll be stimulated by what is available. We're very fortunate in Columbus. We have what I would loosely call our strong legacy organizations, which are really important for the cultural thread in our community. But we also have this incredibly vibrant emerging arts group and individual artists that bring more texture to the community. And I have to admit, I've challenged myself over the last couple of years to go to some things that I had not been a part of before. And every time I come away with a enthusiastic and with a different perspective on what's available in the community. And so I would just challenge people to maybe try something they hadn't tried before. And you'll be surprised how much you'll like it and enjoy it.
Are people, Julie, still statewide, still passionate about the arts?
I believe they still are passionate. I do worry sometimes that people have become maybe a little complacent. I mean, for example, with our recent budget recommendation that came out of the executive budget last week on March 15th, I know a lot of people were very concerned that it was going to be much worse than it was. 20% or nearly 20% is bad enough when you take that in the aggregate to the reductions that had taken place in the prior two biennia. But I think people still have to be mindful Because there's also an effort at the federal level, as I said, to reduce funding from the National Endowment for the Arts. And that's going to have a compounded impact not only on the Arts Council, but also on other funding that comes from the NEA directly to organizations in the state of Ohio. So I don't want people to feel like, oh, we dodged the bullet because you're still in the budget. There's still work to be done.
They've been shooting for years, and they're still shooting, yeah.
So there's still, as we said, this work to be done that we have to do a better job of explaining who we are and what we do and why what we do in our communities and across the state is a valuable public sector investment.
And I just want to dovetail with what Milt said. I wish I could just take people by the hand and just go to something. Go to something somewhere. It doesn't have to be downtown because there's a lot going on downtown, but there's a lot going on all over the state. Go to something you would never think of going to before.
Right.
And I think that the Lincoln Theater is reopening what had been a grand neighborhood and a very important neighborhood in the history of culture in Ohio has been sort of reopened and hopefully will continue to thrive there. The King Lincoln.
One of the things, and just to extend upon Julie's comments, economic development. We've gone almost 40 minutes and haven't talked about economic development, and that's a mantra we hear from our political leaders, our corporate leaders, but also from our arts leaders in the community. If you look at and Julie has great information on the economic impact of the arts in the state. But looking at just Central Ohio, it's 11,000 jobs. It's $330 million in economic impact. And our arts and cultural events in the community draw 6 million people a year. And our good friend Nanette Mesa-Junes would always say now that that's more than come to all the Ohio State athletic events combined. So this is a big impact on our lives, but also economically on our community, which is very important for us going forward.
Does that run the danger, though, of having people related to what you said, of hearing that, oh, that's great, so I guess we don't need to help the arts. They're already there. You know, are you a victim of your own success?
Well, but some of the work that's been done recently by the Columbus Foundation and others looking at the arts community as a whole, we see that the resources for arts groups has declined. The financial resources over the last 10 years. Contributed income has been flat for 10 years. Expenses have been flat. The arts organizations generally have very little cash reserves or endowments. And so we're at a real difficult point that we have to be very careful about this fragile ecosystem that we have.
Which is very different from cities of our size across the country.
Right. Hold on to that thought because I want to build on that. We have to take a break now for 90 seconds. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend with Julie Henahan, Stephen Anderson, and Milt Boffman. We will be back in 90 seconds. Don't go away.
The film The Fighter is now on DVD. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from the director David O. Russell and the film's star Mark Wahlberg, who trained for 2 years to prepare for the role.
I didn't want to look like an actor who could skip a little rope and if you shoot him the right way, that he could look pretty decent in the ring. I wanted to look like a real boxer who could actually go and win the title.
Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Jacques Pepin's world travels influences cooking. Watch More Fast Food My Way Saturday afternoons on WOSU-TV. This week, the menu will feature the essence of Spain. Then be sure to tune in on April 30th when Jacques will be in the WOSU kitchen for Chefs in the City. Watch Jacques Pepin, More Fast Food My Way, Saturday afternoons at 2:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from Kappa, Steve Solomon's off-Broadway one-man comedy titled My Mother's Italian, My Father's Jewish, and I'm in Therapy, starring Ron Tobin, comes to the Lincoln Theater April 1st and 2nd. Details and tickets at kappa.com.
And it's 31 degrees in downtown Columbus. Clouds today, a high of 42 degrees. Cloudy skies tonight and cold, a low of 22. Partly sunny for Saturday, a high of 39, and there's a chance of snow Saturday night, a low of 25. All Sides Weekend continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Okay, put down your brackets for just about 20 more minutes. We're going to continue this conversation about the arts in the state of Ohio and specifically in our listening area in Central Ohio. I'm Christopher Purdy, All Sides Weekend with Stephen Anderson, the Artistic Director of CATCO Phoenix. Julie Hennehan is the Executive Director of the Ohio Arts Council, and Milt Buffman is the President of the Greater Columbus Arts Council, three bright people with three difficult jobs that they are very devoted to. If you'd like to join our conversation, 292-8513, or you can send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Let's talk about economic development. Let's spend some time with that. Milt, pick up where you were.
Well, I talked about the impact in Central Ohio, and Julie's got some great references to the impact over the state as a whole, which are also really important.
Well, I think that it's important for people to understand the economic impact of the arts in the state. I think too often arts and culture is not seen as the business that they are. Whether you're a nonprofit or a for-profit arts or cultural business, it is a part of the Ohio economy. It actually came out 2 years ago now, but Bowling Green State University did an economic impact study called the Arts and Prosperity, and that report showed that the creative industries, now this includes both profit and nonprofit organizations and businesses in the state, is a $25 billion a year industry in the state of Ohio that employs over 213,000 people. So some of the things we've been looking at recently, that 213,000 people is the fifth largest city in the state of Ohio. It would be the largest industry in Ohio if you took that as an aggregate whole. So I think that people need to think about what the arts are and what they are as jobs and a part of the economy in a different way. I think because we aren't in one big building or factory or like a huge the auto industry or some of the other major industries, it's not seen in that way. But when you look at the aggregate, we are a powerful force in Ohio's economy.
And it's good to commit. But do you go to legislators with numbers on a piece of paper and say, look at this, you know?
I do.
Yep.
Yes, it takes everything. It takes the stories. It takes the facts. It takes the relationship.
So the days of the arts being wonderful because they're good for you are gone.
That can't be your only argument.
Right, right.
I think there's a quality of life argument,
yes,
too,
sure,
that's really
yeah.
important for us. That the arts are an important thread through entertainment, sports, dining options that we have in our communities. And it's an important element to retain young people in our community and to attract people to our communities,
yes.
which is really critical.
But people do. Young people either stay, they go to one of our schools here, they stay, mm-hmm. or they come in. People are coming in. 20-somethings are coming in to live as artists. I guess they're attracted by what to them are lower rents than New York or mm-hmm. certainly L.A. or something. And they are coming in and they are working. So something – there's some reason for that. Something's thriving here. What is it, Stephen? Am I right?
We're on the cusp of something okay. really important right now, I think. I think we have leadership in this community and the arts organizations and at the various agencies that get that the world has changed enormously in the 21st century. And those young people, I think, are responding to just the sense that there's something happening here. Our ticket sales are up 12% this year.
That's great.
Which is an amazing thing in this economy. Mm-hmm. That indicates that people are interested in going to the arts and seeing things, and there are new folks. And so I think that there's something that we can't quite put our finger on, but we need to be able to harness it.
And also remember, everybody listening, that if the arts in anywhere are in Central Ohio are having trouble financially, quality is not the issue. I mean, we're not trying to sell bad art, bad performances. Quite the contrary.
All you have to do is go see the renovations at the museum.
The beautiful.
Yes.
And
beautiful?
To see
yes.
that. And you've got and I think Stephen and his colleagues at Phoenix deserve a lot of credit for the quality of the season they've had this year. And it's just an extension of what they've done over the years. And that increase in attendance is a result of that.
And remember, it's CATCO Phoenix. And a lot of people don't see the Phoenix thing because their performances are for kids during school hours. Mm-hmm. But I've been to a couple of them. I was a very big fat kid there sitting in the back. But they were filled with children who were engaged in theater. They were watching. They were listening. They weren't fidgeting. They didn't, you know.
A big part of the new model is community involvement and deep grassroots. And, you know, frankly, that's why I was chosen for the job, was because that's what I'm passionate about.
You get that.
You notice as soon as Milton Jewett just hadn't mentioned yet the Artists in Education and Artists in Schools programs, I was the one to jump in, because it's been the horse that I've ridden very. And we're not just talking about children.
Well,
we're talking about preschoolers to seniors.
It's so lifelong learning.
It absolutely is.
Well, to the day I die, I will never forget seeing that little boy in Portsmouth with one leg learning ballet in a circus school, and the look on his face and how he was doing it. And that's something that the OAC was involved with.
Yes.
So that's just one. And there are all kinds of programs out there you'll never hear about unless you live in the area. But they are there, and they are critical. And I also wanted to ask each of you about, we have a new player, literally, in town. The Columbus Symphony has a new music director and a conductor. My feeling is he's going to stick around. He's here for the long haul. He's a young man named Jean-Marie Zaitouni. If you don't know his work, he's conducting tomorrow night at 8 o'clock in the Ohio Theater and Sunday afternoon at 3. Come on down, check it out. What does the appointment of someone like that mean for the local arts economy, the local arts buzz, Milt?
Well, I think he's going to bring, and already has, bring a lot of energy to the symphony and to other arts organizations. He's brings a lot of personal enthusiasm, and I think you're going to see some great results from that.
Yeah, well, just last week, Sunday, I believe it was, they announced their new programming, which is really pretty out of the box. They're going to be down at the Southern for a certain number of concerts, and they're doing some Friday at noon concerts.
They are bending the model. They're getting away from 8 o'clock at night in a dark theater sitting there. And I've said before, I think that model has served everybody very well for 100 years, enough already. I mean, I think you know, he's doing one-hour concerts at rush hour, at people come from work. He's going where the fish are. They're down there, and they're down there at 5:30 on Thursday, not at 8 o'clock. So that's, you know, again, he's bringing it to the people, and I think I hope when we all are together a year from now and have this conversation, I hope that the news will be really incredible. But the other thing about downtown, I've been downtown of a Saturday night, and you're Catco, you're up in the Rife Center, and the ballet is in the Capitol Theater, and Pro Musica is at the Southern, and the Symphony's there, all on the same night, but there's nothing else. There's nowhere to go eat. I mean, it's
getting
not
better,
getting
though, Christopher.
Inviting.
It's getting better.
Okay.
Every month it gets better, you know, in terms of new businesses downtown and new places
That's
to eat.
That's what I want to ask you. Is this really happening? Building up the
downtown? I think so. And Gay Street is just so
vibrant
now, and there's so much more going on, and I think that's, you might have to walk a little bit from
that's
the theaters,
right.
But yeah.
Okay. So
Columbus Commons is going to be great for us.
Yes,
right.
I mean, that's
clearly an outdoor site, but I think that's going to be really exciting, and it's going to be a venue for organizations
kinds of
also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and when the riverfront, I'm sorry, I should know what it's called.
Discovery.
At any rate, the
Sight of the Mile.
Sight of the Mile. Thank you, Milt. You saved me. is I think going to be very exciting. You see that it'll be an extraordinarily beautiful and be a reason to go downtown.
What does the future hold? Milton, Juliet, Stephen, your work never stops. It may change. I have a feeling in the last few months it's gotten more intense, maybe. You're working harder.
It's been very intense. I am not shy about saying that. The last several months have been very, very intense. But I think it's all going to come out to the good for the arts in Ohio. You mentioned something earlier about people participating and people need to come to these events. We just finished a strategic planning process, and part of that was a survey we conducted last summer to garner information from the field. Clearly, from the responses we received in the survey, people are still very much interested in attending and participating in the arts. They participate personally in the arts in a variety of ways through a variety of disciplines. I think that we're seeing people engage in that participation in different ways than they may have in the last few decades. It's changing, but there's still a deep and abiding interest and love for the arts, and there's always, I believe, going to be that participation going on. This was a great survey. I have to say we had over 5,700 participants respond, and from 87 of the 88 counties. Which,
that's great.
Yeah, it was unexpected,
yes.
And we were very, very pleased with that.
Is there such a thing as too much art? Is there such a thing as too much going on?
I don't think you could ever say that there's too much. I mean, I think that it will exist where there are people who are. I mean, the changes in technology. Who doesn't know a 14-year-old kid who's making a movie on their on their Mac? You know, I mean, is that too much art?
Good.
You know, I mean, it's going to stimulate greater artistry, I think.
So how do you make that 14-year-old kid want to come to a live play or be in a live play or direct a live play?
Well, one of the ways
that's not really tech savvy.
Right. One of the ways that we're going to do that next year is we're going to, from the very beginning of our design process on one of our shows, we're going to have a Facebook page in which I see the inspiration pictures the designers send me, and I make comments on them, and public will be open to make comments on them, and we'll continue to refine them as we move through. First rehearsal will be another reading with Twitter screen, and final rehearsal will be that, and there will be public forums as well. A mix of the new and the old, and just try to find as many ways that we can say, here's the door. Here's the door, here's the door, here's the door. There are many ways to come into this organization.
I think talkbacks are very important, too. The symphony's begun to do that, and you've done that for years at Catco Phoenix, where the audience is invited to stay after the performance and talk to the people who made the art and ask questions. And when the symphony did it, I thought, oh, maybe 50 people will stay. No, there were quite a lot of people who stayed after the last run of performances with very good questions and very interesting. People were very connected, so I think that's very, very important as well. Talk about the audience. I mean, if I hear graying audience one more time, I'm going to scream. So,
I read an interesting article last week about the fact that, you know, I mean, people bemoan graying audiences. Well, those people are the foundation that have kept these arts alive. The real question is, how are we going to engage the young people
to
be philanthropists
and
their children? And I think we're doing a better job of doing that. But I get a little unhappy about this notion of, you know, well, our audience is too old. Excuse me? I mean, that's a great experience that we should have in our theaters.
I think also that younger people today are not passive. We were sort of brought up in a more strict, you and I are the same age, Stephen, a little more restricted environment where, you know, you followed all kinds of rigid. It was more rigid, let's face it.
You sat in the seat.
Right, it. You sat there and you were quiet, and then you went home. And if you were taken to the symphony when you were eight, there was no follow-up to that. You had this 1 hour, and then you went home, and you weren't allowed to twitch or move or do anything.
It's like sitting in church.
Exactly right. That's exactly right. And now churches can get pretty wild, too, which is wonderful. So
we call that the arts dip.
You know,
you're done for this year.
This year. We dipped it this year. So, I mean, do you think that we have to catch that real energy from these young people and encourage them to break it down a little bit?
And we are. Virtually every major arts organization has an education director, and those education directors meet together in a group called Ace Collective once every 6 weeks and share best practice and ways that they can work together and things that they can do. So I think we're getting smarter about that.
We've seen changes in the way arts organizations offer their programming. Subscriptions are harder and harder for people to do, and,
right,
and particularly for people younger than me that don't want to necessarily commit to a full season, but there are a lot of options now, and it doesn't take much to find those options because arts organizations have become much more tech savvy and social media savvy, and some of the examples that Stephen gave are bring that point home.
And I don't know how many performances or places I've been to where things start late and they'll say backstage, oh my God, we're late because there's a line at the box office. And I say, that's a great reason. Be as late as you want. You know. But the point is that people are more spontaneous now. They are not committing their money and their time in advance, which the old subscription model, which worked great for 40 years, is done now. So you really, I mean, I've come out in front of curtains and said, we're late because people want to come in, so deal with it. And then it's a great...
Well, I think we have to accept that as a... part of that there are a lot more things out there for people to do these days, and they're not making those decisions until probably
6 o'clock.
O'clock, you know, certainly within 24 hours of curtain time. Mm-hmm.
We have a call from David of the Ohioana Library Association, whom we all know, the development director, and he's going to be pithy and brief. And hi, David. Are you there?
I am here.
Go ahead.
Hi, Christopher. Hello, everyone.
Hi, David.
I just wanted to say what a great discussion, and thank you for having this. I wanted to say, too, we had talked about the fact, you know, of all of you mentioned the smaller communities that would not be served were it not for the Ohio Arts Council. But I also wanted to make a mention of the innovative programs that get started, the organizations like My Own Ohio in a Book Festival, which is coming up May the 7th, its fifth year. If it had not been for OAC and GCAC, that project would never have gotten off of the ground. And I think back 25 years ago when I started a little thing called Columbus Light Opera, and the Lancaster Festival was starting, Phoenix Children's Theater was starting, it was the seed funding from the Arts Council that made those projects and programs possible.
David, you can come back free anytime. Thank you. Thank you very much and your continued good work. Thank you very much. That's a good point, though. I mean, let's face it. I mean, your agencies and your creativity have been working in the community for years. And I think the reason that there is so much great art now is because of these two agencies and because of great theater that Stephen's been doing. So are you hopeful? Are we hopeful for the future? Julie Hanahan, are we hopeful?
I am hopeful.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
There's still a lot of work to be done, and we've got very full plates, and we still are moving forward.
We need to grab a legislator and take him to something, or her to something. We need to take them to something. Stay, you know.
Absolutely.
Here's a brown bag lunch. Let's go to Catco Phoenix or the ballet or something and check it out. Steve Anderson, you tend to be very optimistic anyway.
I'm so curious about the future.
Yeah.
I know that things are going to be very, very different. They already are. I mean, the last 5 years have changed for us enormously. And so I'm curious about how we're going to face these challenges.
How do you think we are going to face these challenges?
I think it's going to be through innovation and creativity and being open and making sure that all folks realize that they are invited.
Do you know what I realized about myself in the arts? I'm of an age now where I'm not really interesting, I don't think, to a lot of programmers because I don't know enough about the new technology and the stuff that the 17 and 18 and my daughter knows about, that they can do that in their sleep. And I think they are going to take over as the time comes for all the best reasons. And I think in some ways they're going to reinvent some art forms. I think theater may look and sound different in 10 years than we've been used to it our entire lives. And opera's already changing completely. And we have new models for presenting the symphony that Maestro Zaituni is starting next season. So I'm excited, too. If I'm still vertical, you know, I'll look forward to that a lot. But one last question, because we only have a couple of minutes left. What brought each of you to Ohio or to this kind of work in Ohio, Milt? Why are you doing this work now? You could be playing golf. You know, you could really, you
well,
could.
Well, I don't play golf very well. That's the first reason. But no, I think.
I mean, who needs it? Why are you doing this?
No, I think it's really wonderful to be involved with community-centered organizations. This is a community that takes a great deal of pride in what we have to offer for our citizens. And I think to be able to play a small role in that is very satisfying.
And Julie, you have a long career with OAC, the Ohio Arts Council, don't you?
That's going to be 27 years this summer.
What did you start doing when you started there? What were you doing? And what was the agency like?
It was much larger than it is now. I was an administrative assistant in the grants office. And prior to that, I had worked for 2 years for E.F. Hutton. Don't ask me why. because I actually have a history degree and a humanities and classics minor. But, you know, you have to keep body and soul together somehow. So, but when I had this opportunity to work at the Arts Council, I snapped it up. And I had no idea what it was going to be, and it turned out to be the Arts Council. Over the years, what has kept me there and has kept me interested and excited about what we're doing. I'm a lifelong Ohioan. I was born and raised and educated here, and seeing on a daily basis what the arts can do to change people's lives, to keep our community strong and healthy, and to keep telling our story. It keeps telling the human story, and that's important to me, and I see it every day.
I think that's a perfect precis. Keep telling the story. You have 20 seconds, Stephen Anderson, to tell the story.
I moved to Ohio to leave the theater.
Did you really?
I did, in fact. I moved out here from L.A., and I'm the only theater professional that the theater has chased instead of them chasing it.
You're doing it because you're addicted, and you're doing it because you have to, right?
Yeah, that's it. Good.
I thank you, the three of you, for this wonderful conversation. I learned a great deal, and I'm always grateful when that happens. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend, and we have talked about the arts. We're going to come back every few months and have the same kind of really not the same conversation because it will change as we go there. Thank you, Julie Hanahan, the Executive Director of the Ohio Arts Council. Thank you, Milt Boffman, the President of GCAC. Thank you, Stephen Anderson, who does everything brilliantly and runs Catco Phoenix.
I'll come back tomorrow.
As well. Thank you all. Thank you to Amy Jurevich, our producer, and to all of you for listening. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Go to something.